Welcome to the McFuture with your very own locally sourced and organically grown McFuturist, Steve Factor.
Today's topic is revolution. There are two things in life I'm certain about. One is that I'll never look like Zac Efron. And two is that we're well on our way to this age of abundance. It's like our very own Garden of Eden without all the snakes and exposed genitals. But there is one catch. It might take a revolution to get there. We are surrounded by things that look revolutionary. In business, new technologies like Bitcoin, solar, and social networks, they're making bankers, oil barons, and media moguls rethink that third home and maybe that third wife. And culture's transforming fast. In the 60s, mixing races was inconceivable. Today, there's no other way to get on Instagram. Even gay marriage is old news. Now the coolest thing you could do is quarrel with your own genitals. And all this change is scaring the hell out of every duck hunter. Then there are all the political movements with all this potential for social chaos. The Tea Party, the 99 percenters, Feel the Burn, Trump Train, and Anonymous. All this turmoil is part of a massive transformation, but of the American dream. The American dream is going full Mickey Rourke. Its face is changing fast. Just like Mickey's face, you know, started out all dreamy and then it fell apart. And then miraculously, it looks okay again. Same thing's happening to us. These uprisings are not breaking us apart or even threatening the establishment. Instead, they're reshaping the American dream into something very different. It's no secret why people are pissed. For the 30% of Americans that have four-year degrees, there's lots of competition for good, high-paying jobs, but they're out there. For the rest, it's mostly shitty jobs servicing the other people with degrees. Not much in the middle. Automation is this cruel mistress. She gives us shiny new toys and new ways to enjoy them, but hands the spoils of victory to capital and capital owners, never to the workers. Suddenly, we're surrounded by what's possible, but we're discouraged by what's probable. People are realizing that the fat old power brokers, the politicians, corporations, guys with caviar stains on their mistresses, they've got no intention of inviting them to this dance. Battle lines are drawn. On one side, you have these powerful incumbents, and they have a massive stake and investment in the current system. On the other side, you have all these individuals that are armed with technologies that might displace them. Old institutions feel their powers fading. They've never been more afraid or more dangerous. Plus, human nature's on their side. Everyone fears change, even fearless innovators with defiant monologues. It is undeniable something is happening. For now, let's call it a revolution. There are three parts to this revolution. The first is these new tools and technologies. A few of them will change the balance of power, but most of them are going to preserve it. The second are the actions we take with those tools. Could be legal ones, could be illegal, and it could be by individuals or groups or countries. Finally, there are the new systems that we're going to create, hopefully improving on the ones that we have today. Let's start with the new tools of the revolution and who controls them. Big cash is pouring into all sorts of new technologies. It won't be long before robots tuck our kids in at night, before we print our meals and the plates that they're served on. And artificial intelligence will create love dolls that make our spouses sweat. Rich people will live for well over 100 years, and eventually we will too. And all things will be smart. Long after we are not. But who controls all of these new tools? This brings me to the most beloved tool builders of today, startups. Every morning, Silicon Valley titans and nerd armies wave their iPads in the air and scream, "Disruption!" Then they slide into their cocoons to rain ones and zeros of doom on some unsuspecting industry. Except, startups are Trojan horses. We think of them as revolutionaries, when in fact, they're the farm team for the establishment. Very few make a profit, or even become standalone companies, or change the world for that matter. 86% or more are acquired by big companies. Jet.com was supposed to conquer Amazon.com. It got bought by Walmart. Dollar Shave Club was supposed to rain cheap razors on the masses, although that sounds a little bloody. They were bought by Unilever. Vice, they're supposed to be the biker gang of news. They're part owned by Rupert Murdoch, Walt Disney, and A&E Networks. So the startup revolution is mostly a story they tell themselves. Our toolmakers mostly make big business bigger. The Fortune 500 used to be 35% of GDP in 1955. Now it's 72% of our economy. And 100 companies make up almost half of our entire economy. Think about that. Half. The president can take all their CEOs' phone calls in 2 afternoons. And they're using their advantages, cash, protective regulations, scale, brand, to control as many of these fancy new tools as they can. And this concentration is happening in every major industry. When it comes to controlling the tools of revolution, most industries are lost causes. In food, healthcare, banking, and internet access, the tools are in the hands of monopolies, oligopolies, cartels. All the words you forgot from econ class. In 1990, the 5 largest banks controlled 10% of banking assets. Today, they control 44%. And the 62 richest people have more wealth than the poorer half of the entire world population. Sure, there have been lots of startups in finance, and some of them will get bought. Maybe some will become real companies. But if you look at the history, look at PayPal. That was supposed to revolutionize finance. This is how many companies PayPal put out of business. 0. And tools like robo-investing, mobile payments, crowdfunding, all of them are going to be part of the establishment. Even Bitcoin, it was supposed to do for money what the internet did for porn and for Bieber. Instead, banks use its technology, they've cornered the market on its intellectual property, and they finance most Bitcoin startups. Revolution averted. Let's talk about internet access. 82% of Americans have only one choice of internet provider. That's the same number of choices as in your average Russian election. And 2 companies control almost 70% of mobile access. And then like horny teenagers, they keep trying to hook up with the rest of them. So far, the FCC has forced them to hump the cushions. But let's face it, net neutrality or not, we are owned. Companies like Verizon and Comcast, they can raise prices and impose data caps at will. They know we'll eat our own firstborn before giving up our iPhones. Still, our tools keep improving. Because there's pressure from within the ecosystem. iPhone, Google Fiber, messaging apps. These monopolists have been forced to innovate, albeit slowly and without real existential threats. Let's talk about food. I try not to ask too many questions about what makes it into my fat face. The 4 largest food companies control 82% of beef production. Monsanto owns the genetic code for 80 to 90% of all soybeans and corn grown in the US. And then there's only 9 companies that own all of those colorful logos on supermarket shelves that masquerade as choices. Sure, the UN says small-scale organic urban farming will save the world. Well, until those lazy pricks mud wrestle Monsanto to the ground and get me a hoe, the farming kind, they should stop blowing smoke. Distributed farm machinery and vertical farming are all interesting ideas, but they have not made a dent. And let's face it, our hipsters aren't working hard enough. There's not nearly enough kale growing in their bathtubs. But shelf life keeps improving, so does packaging and crop yields and distribution efficiency. These innovations have allowed global populations and our fat bellies to explode. Then there's military. Wow, 5 military contractors get 90% of all contracts. When you spend $600 billion a year on something, anything, are you surprised we have to use it? The military might eke out an occasional trillion-dollar burp of innovation, but planes like the F-35 don't even fly, and they've cost us $1.5 trillion. A slight transition to cyber warfare is creating some new monopolies like Palantir, which does security software and data for the government. But don't expect anything to change unless we, the people, change. This is the best example of the massive state defending its massiveness. Let's talk about healthcare. Hospitals, insurers, drug companies, they're all merging. There are a few challengers in this space, but they're going to be acquired because they need to get distribution in these regulated, consolidated markets. There are lots of opportunities to drive costs down. The irony is, if regulators didn't exist, we'd still end up with a single-payer system, except that payer would be a giant private monopoly. Then there's airlines. 10 years ago, there were 9 major airlines. Today, there are 4. And each day, that consolidation translates into hemorrhoids everywhere. Tinier and tinier seats, longer lines, and cavity searches without a hint of romance. There are a few industries that offer slivers of hope. You look at media. Not long ago, 3 TV networks mesmerized the nation with Gilligan's Island and some jowly old man introducing the Beatles. Today, scores of half-naked hotties can barely muster a one share and a handful of hipster tweets. Cheap digital tools spawned countless blogs and podcasts and grumpy cat videos. Some successfully compete with big networks for our time and for advertiser money. Tyler Perry is practically his own industry and his own mother. Clearly, this kind of empowerment must be crushed, or at least controlled. With copyright lawsuits, licensing controls, acquisitions, incumbents are putting back together all of this fragmentation as much as they can. Comcast bought NBC, and it's merging with Time Warner to get more leverage with content providers. AOL bought Huffington Post and Gadget and TechCrunch. Yahoo bought Tumblr. Then Verizon bought both of those turkeys, AOL and Yahoo. Even online porn is a monopoly. Yes, your spank bank is too big to fail. Even major music labels renewed their grip on music, owning a big chunk of Spotify. A few graduated from challenger to establishment, so you look at Netflix and Amazon. They now kind of threaten cable monopolies, but they're also working with them. There's only so much you can do when your biggest ammunition is Adam Sandler. But consolidation is this endless treadmill. The number of possible media competitors is infinity. That's a lot of acquisitions. Even these giants are at the mercy of better consolidators like Facebook or Google. And new technologies let any idiot with a microphone compete with them. Wait a minute. Now let's talk about software. As our lives become more virtual, it's pretty clear that those who own the software will own the world. But it's not a bunch of bubbly Buddhists sitting around doing whatever the hell Buddhists do. It just seems so gentle. No, software is controlled by giant corporations like Google, Microsoft, Oracle, and Salesforce. But more important than who they are is what they are. More and more of them are in the cloud. Think of your Gmail. It doesn't sit at home like some Victorian-era housewife making porridge. It sits on their computers, and you pay to access it. So do advertisers. So can governments, hackers, clumsy employees. When you sign Microsoft's 35,000-word user agreement, you're signing away your legal rights to sue if something happens. And inevitably, it always does. Everyone gets hacked. You're no longer a citizen of the U.S. You're an avatar in Microsoftia. And I'm not singling Microsoft out. Every major tech company does the same exact thing. Maybe they all copy and paste. I don't know. Successful open source projects that protect privacy, Mozilla Firefox and Linux, are out there, but get smothered by vicious tycoons dressed in harmless hoodies. But there is hope. Software players can rise and fall quickly. Somewhere in that turmoil is salvation. Then let's talk about this next group of industries. I call them the new order. No, not the depressing 80s band for cutters. Transportation, energy, and education are changing massively. In energy, the ultimate freedom is being able to live off the wind, the sun, or hummingbird farts. This hippie dream is finally becoming a reality. Thanks to heavy subsidies and cheap Chinese solar panels, clean energy investment and adoption is crushing fossil fuels in terms of growth. And consumers are eating it up. Things like Tesla and all these home batteries. These challengers promise to free us from the grid, which only sounds like a bad Bruce Willis movie. Is there a good Bruce Willis movie? I guess maybe Die Hard, but I haven't seen that one. I know. I'm like 2 to 3 decades behind. Of course, utilities and oil companies aren't just going to roll over. Many utilities are instituting fees, taxes, regulations to turn back this trend. Similarly, oil sheiks are in a panic. Many are down to their last concubine. And fossil fuel companies are preparing for this wave of consolidation as demand starts to wane. Free abundant energy is an unstoppable force as long as we can see the sun. That only leaves Julian Assange and several gamers burning coal. Then there's transportation. Taxis have been shitty forever. In New York, they smell and crush your knees if you're anything over 5 feet tall. They assault you with ads, and their payment terminals have all the grace of the Elephant Man dancing with the stars. Uber, Lyft, and others came along with a better product. Their soulless drive to succeed is only matched by Kris Jenner. Despite all the protests and the surge pricing and all the other issues people have had with them, the people have spoken. These guys are winning. But there is a catch. Uber, the challenger, is quickly becoming Uber, the incumbent. Taxis and others will challenge them, but scaled networks with low margins are very hard to beat. The same can be said of resistance to electric cars. Tesla will eventually defeat all those crony laws that keep them from selling direct to consumers. And eventually autonomous cars will put transportation in the cloud for you to rent, just like your Gmail. So goodbye, dealers. What will really change things are self-driving cars. But my money is on existing competitors owning that space too. Let's talk about education. We have $1.2 trillion in student debt. Good jobs exist for only people with four-year degrees, but that's less than 30% of the population. And 50% of graduates work in jobs that don't even require degrees. And almost 40% of college students are virgins. Clearly, traditional education is failing. And primary and secondary education, there's no world like that anymore unless you teach kids how to think. Online courses, all this data we're collecting, candidate screening tools, all these things are going to give people the education they need for the price of pokey points. We're going to discuss a lot of this in an upcoming episode I recorded with Rick Levin, who is the CEO of Coursera, which is one of the biggest online schools, and he's the former president of Yale for 20 years. So what actions are we taking with all of these new tools? Let's talk about two examples. The first is a state of unrest. Think of Europe and the euro. I mean, at this point, staying in Europe is like wearing a Victorian gown to SoulCycle. All that fabric gets caught in the gears and the spokes. People and countries are aching to break free into small, manageable tribes. They no longer need these sprawling empires to thrive. Most countries can eliminate layers of management the way Uber eliminated taxi dispatchers. Britain's Brexit might be the exception, but Catalonia, Scotland, and Quebec, they might not be far behind. And you see all of the ethnic versions of this happening with Iraq and the Kurds who are cobbling together Kurdistan with parts of Iraq and Turkey and Saddam's old socks. Same thing with Ukraine. Good luck to them. Even within countries, factions are fracturing. Without good jobs and upward mobility, groups start to eat away at each other. It's the billionaires and the corporations. No, it's the Muslims. No, it's the Chinese. No, it's the cops. No, it's definitely the Mexicans. These new tribes, based on our shared causes or maybe chosen enemies, are now overturning other outmoded or maybe unpopular ones. Our second set of actions is even bigger. The battle over data, surveillance, and privacy will shape our future. That is the real disruption. But only informed citizens vaguely pay attention to it. There's very little that we do online that can't be traced back to us. But Americans have no clue how often our data is breached, shamed, and roofied. It's like Cosby's running the place. There's a great interactive graphic I'm going to link to in the show notes of the endless compromises of data that happen every single year. Just now, Yahoo, hundreds of millions of accounts. The only letters I still get in the mail are from companies apologizing for being hacked, and they're giving me subscriptions to credit monitoring services. Good thing I'm not a conspiracy theorist, otherwise I'd suspect these services are the ones doing the hacking. Times have been rough for whistleblowers who are trying to help us take action. Chelsea Manning was once a free man. Now she's serving 35 years as evil Caitlyn Jenner. Julian Assange was once a handsome black man, but he hasn't seen sunlight in years, hidden in El Baño of the Ecuadorian embassy. And Snowden, he's on his 1,856th bowl of borscht. And Anonymous, they've made big threats against all sorts of politicians and companies, but so far their damage has been limited to 4 zesty Yelp reviews and an animated GIF. This battle for data rages on, across borders and hard drives everywhere. So where's this all going? What happens next? Our new tools and actions will produce a better system, but one the founding fathers would never recognize. We're no longer fighting for liberty, independence, or rugged individualism, like fat Avengers. We're fighting for a maternal interdependence. You might even call it a codependence. Think about it. Whether it's Bernie or Trump or any of our hashtag movements, people are not fighting against the establishment. They're fighting for a different kind of establishment, a motherly one that gives us education and healthcare and shared prosperity, and a fatherly one that gives us work and keeps us safe from invading tribes. American individualism has surrendered to the collective. We want mommy or daddy. Even the latest startups, food delivery, house cleaning, car service, running errands, they're basically mommy substitutes. They're our new caretakers. Plus, let's face it, we're fresh out of revolutionaries. A study by Publicis Group shows that most millennials trust corporations more than they trust government to solve big problems. And they're gladly taking corporate jobs. When they were asked what was the thing they most value in a job, they said money, security, time off, great people, flexible hours. So, Che Guevara, take that, revolution. If we stay on this path, our new platforms, they're not going to topple the establishment. They'll make it bigger, but also more accountable. More data and transparency are going to make it harder for politicians and companies to hide facts and defend bad decisions. Just like we have cameras on cops and open secrets to track political corruption and activists exposing farm animal abuse, we'll eventually have a Yelp for everything. And decentralized enemies like hackers and terrorists, they're not going to disappear, but they will weaken because there are going to be fewer and fewer places for them to hide once we're all stitched together. For better or worse, more and more of our freedoms will reside on a handful of massive private services like Twitter, WhatsApp, Facebook. For now, they have the power to silence whoever they don't like, effectively depriving them of freedom. We haven't even begun confronting this reality. And at the same time, these platforms will bring us closer together, but in entirely new ways. Our new tribes, they're not going to be based on badly drawn borders or languages or even cultures, but on interests, philosophies, and beliefs. We're as likely to start a bar fight over climate change or the New England Patriots as we once were over God or country, as actual patriots. New startups will also continue building tools for the big institutions, and corporations will use trade deals like TPP to set global ground rules. And as a counterbalance, we'll see more collective action, because as jobs go away, it'll be our last source of leverage. A good example of that is crowdfunding and maybe Bernie-style small fundraising. That'll lead to a better allocation of resources and hopefully a fairer democracy. Of course, the irony of our new tools is that they could eliminate most bureaucracy, but few of them are going to scale fast enough to do it. So we're stuck teaching big old dogs new tricks, and they take forever to jump or roll over. Unfortunately, that means the right things won't always happen in the right order. That'll create conflict and tension. At the end, all this conflict is an amazing gift. As technology eliminates jobs, the one thing it cannot eliminate is adversity. And it's adversity that gives rise to greatness, great artists and thinkers and makers. It creates tension between opposing forces. That's what fuels innovation. From American independence to civil rights to all of our modern conveniences, what would we have been without struggle? Sweden? No offense, but no thanks. I do believe our latest struggles will pave our way towards abundance. For some before others, it'll be a lumpy ride, but we will get there. Over the coming months, I will cover in the McFuture how this will unfold. Some of these will be trends and some of these will be solutions, and there's going to be a lot of amazing interviews. I'm going to explore these topics in depth with Nobel Prize winning economists like Joseph Stiglitz, with CEOs, cultural icons. It's going to be amazing. I'm Steve Factor, and I'll be your guide to the McFuture. If you like this, please go on iTunes or your favorite app, rate us 5 stars, and share it with a friend. See you next week.
Visit ideafactory.com, that's factory with a K, to subscribe to upcoming episodes. Get our crystal balls in your inbox.